got it out of my system now. Evening, welcome to the Big Show. Yeah, if my camera looks a bit weird, it's because the update to Big Sur has killed the little intensity thing with the with my HG10 on it, so I'm stuffed. So I'm gonna have to try and do with the I've got a Thunderbolt Mac here, or Thunderbolt Apple screen. So I'm using the iSight camera on that, and it's okay, it's passable. It's not the end of the world. I look like I've had a blue rinse, which I haven't, but never mind, eh?
Joining me. You're into the age for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh. 37 seconds in. Jesus Christ. Joining me, complete at the top left. Howard, it's the auto.
Good evening, everybody. Ian Grant.
Ian Grant, yeah, how you doing,
turning it off and back on again here again, yes. Insulting him already.
What have you been up to, brother?
The usual things, work, a bit of consultancy, a bit of this, bit of that. Keep myself busy in my lockdown, in my little lockdown world over here.
And I can see that the digs about your kettle have got to you, because that's gone.
Well, yeah, I had a nice photo of the city and I saw somebody doing it. I think Miller was doing it last week. I thought, well, why not? At least then you get something nice to look at instead of me.
Yeah, quite.
There's a city in the sun. That's off one of the bridges in town. City of York behind me.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I do like York, actually. I've been there a couple of times now, and it is very good.
It's a good city. It's a good city to live in.
Nice. Next to him, Jeffrey.
You know, when you said upper left corner, complete, you could have been talking about any of us.
No, because he's in the upper left corner.
Oh, that's true. If I had only been looking at the live stream at the time, I would have realized that.
All the other t- are in different locations.
That's true. So I'm what, upper right corner?
I wouldn't describe you as that in any way at all, mate. So.
You're the sweetest ever.
Yeah. How's life in Boulder?
It's still plodding along up here. Our forest fires are mostly contained, so can see the sky again, and it's been sunny and nice.
Why? No roaming cats or wildlife in the street?
Yes, but I haven't seen them myself. But I've heard people say that the mountain lions are back out in the alleys.
Why? Have you started carrying a gun?
Well, this is America. We all carry guns here.
Good point. Good point. Next to him, Patrice. How's it going, Mrs.?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good week so far. I've been attending a medical conference, online conference.
All right.
It's been very, very interesting. I mean, medical IT, very technical. But, yeah, very good. Interesting. Thoughts that.
It's kept you awake?
No, it is European. Well, it's European-ish, I would say. There are a lot of people from all over the world, even from the US. But it's, Europe-centric.
Excellent.
Zone-wise. So it starts late in the day for me. It started at 1 and then goes until 6, 7. Yeah.
In the evening?
So, yeah, yeah.
Jeez. Must be good.
And and I've been live streaming it so that a couple of people in the company can see it as well that couldn't attend.
Right. So, brilliant. Super.
Little private live stream. Yeah, it was easy. So.
Excellent, mate. I'm glad you had a good week. Next to him, the late Atlee Hunter. Not dead, just late.
Late? How's it going?
It's all right, mate. What you been up to?
Just working, trying to get some semblance of work going and trying to get things together. It's just been a little hard to get anything done at this point.
Including that wall behind you?
Yeah, I'm still waiting. Yeah. I'm still waiting for an electrician to come in and inspect the electrical. I need the inspector to come in and inspect it. Once they've done that, I can start closing things up. It'll be nice. It'll actually start to look like an office in here.
How far in the middle of nowhere do you live, mate?
nearest
it takes months to get
city is about 45 minutes. Nearest town's about 12 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Atlee lives so far away but there's that just, there's it takes not that many 3 seconds in longer area, right? To get to him than it does to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It's, well, there's less than 1 million people in the whole province, right? Right. And so when you look at the number of houses and everything else, police are not still investigating the wall.
And how big is the province? Size of Texas?
Probably pretty, I don't know, comparison-wise.
Really?
it's a pretty decent sized province if you're going by American state standards.
Is it the size of the amount of the Amazon that gets cut down every day, or more than that? Because that's the way they always, you know, there's a piece of land the size of Wales gets cut down in the Amazon every day, and that kind of stuff. So,
but it's probably about that. It's the second smallest province in Canada, but it's
still big.
Still big. that's Canada, right? So, it's probably like Massachusetts size, maybe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Still don't know what that means.
That's way smaller than Texas.
Oh, a piece of ice broke off the size of Rhode Island. Pff, still means nothing. I don't know how much is that Rhode Island. Jesus.
I know.
Isn't Rhode Island not an island? It's a peninsula as well.
It's a peninsula.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know something about America. I'm not that bad. The week in tech, all the big stories that have gone on then, and we're waiting on someone shoving one in the room. Mueller's put other police investigating the wall, hence that comment earlier on from Atlee. Jeff is Fast Fingers. Thank Wonder you, Woman, 1984.
I have another one.
Did I pick your story, Patrice?
Yeah, well, that's okay.
No, go ahead. I have three others. So.
Okay. So the basis of this is that the Wonder Woman sequel, it's been pushed back, and now it's going to be released on December 25th, and Warner that actually made the movie? I think it's Warner.
Right.
They are doing a same-day release where you can go see it in the theater, but it will also stream on HBO Max, and you don't have to pay any extra if you're an HBO Max subscriber. And this is in contrast to what Disney is doing with some of its new movies, where even if you have a Disney Plus subscription, you'll still have to pay to stream
to rent it. 20 quid to rent Mulan once. Mm-hmm. No, you're not buying it for 20 quid. You're renting it for once.
Yeah. Oh. So I won't be watching Mulan.
No.
But for me, the big thing in this is that to me, it's a signal that the movie studios have decided that they really do need to completely change how they are addressing movie releases and doing something where they expect people to go to the theater to watch the movie just isn't going to work anymore. The perfect example is Tenet, which came out and it just flopped, at least in the United States, because it was theaters only and no one would go. And so I think Warner is realizing that if they want people to actually watch their movies, they need to make them easily accessible on launch day, and doing the gouging that Disney is doing just isn't going to fly.
Yeah, I think there's not a lot of there's not a lot of mileage, I don't think, in trying to do that, because people will just go, I ain't paying that, and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Do we think this is beginnings of the end of cinema as we know it?
Probably.
Oh, yeah.
I was just quickly Googling while we were talking to see if I could see what there were. Cineworld in the UK is on the verge of collapse, I think, judging by everything I've read.
Yeah.
And yes. they've got restructuring experts in now. This was reported even just today that it looks like we'll start losing our cinema industry is going to start falling apart, which is a crying shame. It really is. We've got two fantastic sort of, we've got one independent one in York, which is excellent, and we've now got an Everyman, which is a really good cinema, and those are all closed. And then the big chains, they've just opened a brand new, our rugby ground's been revamped massively, and they've opened they didn't even get to open the Cineworld. It literally opened for a week. Brand new building, brand new cinema, all ready to go.
Let's be fair. They've been struggling for the last 15 years.
I was just about to say exactly that. Yeah. So I'm just saying, have they been the cause of their own downfall? Because their greed has been the cancer that's at the heart of killing them at the moment, surely. Gumtree, sorry.
No, exactly. That's exactly the point. Like, I mean, they've been struggling for 15 years, and once first movie downloads, and then especially streaming came along, and more and more and more content, also YouTube and so on, like a lot of competition basically to like going out for a movie, less and less people have gone. And I mean, the ones that have survived are either like the small independent ones that found a niche, or the big chains that somehow still attracted enough people to make it worth their while. But like, even they, like, they had to, like, I mean, they had to price gouge you, and they also had to come up with like, you know, sometimes more, sometimes less creative ideas how they can still like attract people. Like, I don't know.
The thing was, you look at the culture of cinema, go back to the 50s, and you would go out with a girl once a week, and you would take her to the movies because that's all there was. But the movies were priced so that you could afford to go to the movies once a week and still put fuel in your car and still go out for a drink and get her home and buy a packet of fags. Now, I go out with the wife and the two kids to watch a film, and it's 50 quid in tickets, 60 if I buy the VIP seats. It can even be more than that if I go to the gold class stuff. And then by the time we've all had a drink and a bag of chocolate and a bit of sweet corn and nachos, there's another 50 quid. The trip to the cinema is £100 to £120 for four people. Mm. And you're like, hang on, how's that? That's not a weekly thing. You've got to the situation where you've got Cineworlds that are up and multiplexes are up. You've got 12 to 14 or 18 or 20 cinemas or 30 cinemas all showing movies to five people. That's not a profitable model. And the reason that you're showing it to five people is not because no one wants to go to the cinema. They haven't got 100 quid a week to 120 quid a week to go to the cinema.
It's true. I mean, once it had a good deal going on here, I mean, I don't know if this was nationwide, but Vue, every seat was $4.99.
But that was now, the middle of the day.
The last visit I made was one of those going to see Tenet.
But I mean, Muller's got a pass for one of the cinemas complexes. Yeah,
Cineworld, I think, does passes because I've toyed with that myself.
He's Monday to Friday, 9 to 4 or something like that. It's not Saturday night, Friday night, that kind of stuff when they really want to make their money as well as. And there's the weekday nights, and even when we've gone on Saturday nights, the place is still empty. Looking at the wrong camera.
It was very quiet when we went to see Tenet.
Well, that's because Muller said he's been to see Tenet twice and he didn't even understand it once. So,
it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed that film. That was well worth going to see. But I feel it's.
And Muller says he can go anytime. Now. I've got that wrong. Muller says he can go anytime. Muller, how much is your pass costing you? Just out of interest, I'll read that in a second. Sorry, carry on.
I was just Smith Thread now, but is it we are getting to a point now where we just want to consume stuff at home, sat on our sofas, and we don't actually want to go out anymore because, A, it's too expensive, because we pay, what is it, $6.99, $7.99 for Apple TV, and we've got everything we need, or similarly for Netflix or other one?
I think it depends. I mean, there is still business for, like, groups. I mean, not right now, but like before and hopefully after like the whole COVID thing, there's still a business for groups. I mean, I like getting like my friends together or like coworkers or whatever and like making a fun night out of it, like having dinner before completely. And then watching a movie.
But the thing is, the cinema part of that is still not a weekly cost.
No.
Yeah.
No. And that's what's changed.
Every couple of months. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
You're quite right, though. It's not a thing you can go every week. But the thing was, in the 50s, there wasn't an alternative.
No.
You see, the thing now is the now cinema
now,
for...
Now there is.
So now there is an alternative. You should be cheaper.
Streaming services we can consume and watch.
It's a demand
thing. Any movie we like. I still think there's a niche in the market in cinemas for very, very cheap tickets to see old films that are now out of print, the kind of stuff where I'll go... I mean, I've never seen... I can't think of Taxi Driver, say, on the big screen or... one of these old kind of movies, and you can go along and go and sit and watch it on the big screen. I saw the BFI in London. I saw Blade Runner on the big screen for the first time. I've never seen it there. They were doing a screening during its last, whenever it was 25 or 30, whichever it happened to be. And that was fantastic to see on the big screen. There's films like that that I've only ever seen either a crap copy on VHS or DVD or blue or at home on Blu-ray. I'd love to see them in the cinema. Italian Job, stuff like that, you know.
Secret Cinema does fantastically well in the UK. You know, as a pop-up cinema, Secret Cinema does brilliantly. It's full every time it's running. It's showing films that are 20 years old. More. It's about
There's certain films that are just like you said, certain films are definitely made for the movie theater experience. There's movies that you want to be completely surrounded in, and you want to, you know, all the noise, all of the blast. You want everything larger than life. And there's a lot of movies that are like that. But I think that you're not wrong. I think the big issue is that it shouldn't cost almost as much to go to a movie as it does to go to a theater production.
No. Yeah. That's the thing. Weekly cost thing is the key. But the thing is as well that that costing you're saying about, well, it was all very well running cinemas like that, but then there was other opportunities. Yeah, well, if there's other opportunities that are eating into your income, you make yourself cheaper so that people are more attracted to you. You don't make yourself more expensive, and that's where the fault lies.
Yeah.
But I think part of the issue is studios for at least part of that.
Mostly for that, yeah.
Yeah, when you go to the theater and you buy a movie ticket, the cost that you pay for the movie ticket is almost completely going to cover the theater's cost to have the movie from the studios, for the licensing to have the movies from the studios. So then the theaters, they make their money off of concessions. And so as their costs go up, concessions go up. As studios raise the price that they're charging theaters, tickets go up. And then we as the moviegoers, we end up getting screwed because all of a sudden it costs too much money to go to a theater. And then people stop going, which then means theaters aren't bringing in as much money. And then they start doing other things to try and bring in more income, like charging premiums for specific seats. And one of the things that they started doing here as well is putting bars in the theaters. Mm-hmm. Because the margins on alcohol is really high.
Yeah.
So they can make a lot of money just by selling some drinks.
Mm-hmm. Is it bars or restaurants? Like AMC is doing dine-in theaters where you can just like eat basically your dinner there.
Which we have that in here.
A lot of people do
as well. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone does that. Bars. You can sit on a sofa and they'll bring you food.
Mm-hmm.
I did all three of the Star Wars films just before Christmas. Skywalker Returns type set of movies, and they brought food to me and everything. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
and the everybody.
You know, the movies they needed to have that there for were the Lord of the Rings ones. They're so long. The meal before it's over.
Along with a bottle to piss in.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So here's another thing I just thought of. How long before the rules for movies that can be submitted for Oscars change? Because currently they require in-theater distribution. Even if it's a small regional distribution,
that's interesting.
You have to put your movie into an actual movie theater.
And is that all categories like an Oscar? Is that all categories? So like the animated shorts and that kind of stuff, they've all got to go into theaters at some point.
I believe even for the animated shorts, they can qualify through like film festivals.
I do like that though, because I do think the theater experience is worth saving, but you've got to save it with what's savable. You can't save it by paying Robert Downey Jr. $75 million for a film for Endgame. And then, you know, I can't believe that Chris was getting an awful lot less and all the others were getting an awful lot less. So you're talking about $500 million worth of actor fees before you even get into any of the production, the CGI, the marketing and that kind of stuff. And that's just too much. That's not sustainable as a model. And you can't then tell the theatres that they've got to sustain your business model because they can't.
To yours and Jeff's point, exactly. It's the movie studios. I mean, if you look at the blockbusters, The costs have gone up to some extent because they've spent more and more and more and more money, not always very wisely. But also, like, the revenue that they make, I mean, the profits that they make are, like, off those, like you said, Endgame, for example, like, that made I don't know how many billions by now. Someone has to pay that, and that's us. Mm. And it's not because more people are watching them. It's because more people are paying more for them.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that more people watch, let's say, Star Wars, like one of the Star Wars movies, like one of the early ones, than like the latest ones.
We didn't. This recent last trilogy of Star Wars, we didn't go to the cinema to watch any of them.
Yeah, but they have made a crazy amount of money still.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah, but that's the movie studio made 36 times that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the
problem.
Just
like insane money.
Yeah, it's an
amazing amount of money.
It's not even real money anymore. At that point, it's just not pretend.
They're doing it off of us, and they're doing it off of the
But I don't think they are doing it off of us, because we are going, I can't afford to go to the cinema. We are going, I'll wait till it comes out on DVD being Apple TV, and I'll pay $13.99 for all the family to watch it and not pay £200 to go to the cinema to watch it.
Mm.
And that's the key part, is the fact that they are telling us that we've got to pay more, but I think we are voting with our feet, if you like, because we aren't going to the cinemas as much. We did with Endgame, well, I grant you, because it was really popular.
But we're going to the... We're being more selective in what we watch.
Yeah, so, like, we're paying less, though. We're paying less because we're going less. We're not paying more.
But the big blockbusters make more money. Like, otherwise that wouldn't work. Like, people still
That's demand, though, isn't it? That's exactly the point. It's a demand-based business, and you charge based on demand. Supply and demand has been an age-old proposition since you go back to the first time someone said, I'll swap you that for that. But it's the problem is that if cinemas are going bust, there isn't demand. And yeah, okay, you're saying that the big blockbusters that they get, they can put them in three cinemas, but it's not a sustainable model to have 30 cinemas showing one film every 6 to 9 months that will fill three cinemas for 3 weeks. It doesn't get you your money for the rest of the year.
Exactly.
Well, and the movie ticket prices that we're paying, in some cases at least, have to supplement other movies we're not watching, because in many cases, to get the big name movie that you want as a theater, you have to agree to take a package where you take one or two other movies that are not going to be blockbusters that you probably wouldn't carry anyhow. And as a theater, you're going to lose money on having those movies playing, but you're contractually obligated to. So now when someone goes to see Endgame, they're paying for Endgame and a little bit of some other movie that no one's really watching.
Mm-hmm. I've been to
playing in the small theater down in the basement of the Cineplex.
I've been to private showings. I was the only person in the entire theater.
Yeah, I've been in similar ones, but when I've been traveling, in the days of traveling, I think, I can't see a film tonight. I'm bored. And I wander down the local cinema, the local movieplex, and what's on for a fiver? Well, I've not seen that. And I have been the only one in the theatre.
Yep. Yeah, no. I used to go, the Metropole Hotel at the NEC here used to have a cinema in it. It was about a 50 seat cinema, and I saw a lot of films there, Top Gun and that kind of stuff. And it was always dirt cheap, and it was nearly always empty as well. It was good.
Yeah, but yeah. The $6-7 that I paid for that movie, for sure, did not pay even for the power that theater was using.
I keep looking at the wrong camera.
Hey, last time I was in Bramall, the time before, I went over to Wolverhampton to see a film in a really small independent, because I wanted to see Death of Stalin. The only place was showing it was there, in this really tiny little indie cinema. It was fantastic. I mean, that sort of thing I'll miss. A lovely little homegrown thing.
Yeah, the only one that I know in Wolverhampton that does that shows porn during the day.
Probably does, to be fair. I mean, I don't know. It's just a little tiny play, really little tiny, like, theatre with one room at the back. And it was almost like watching it on telly, but it was still, for the group of small, mostly grey-haired, I must admit, people that went to watch it, it was it was really quite a nice atmosphere.
Oh, yeah. I just want to point out, I don't actually know any porn films in or theatres in Wolverhampton. Honest. Arecibo's falling down?
Yes, Arecibo is falling down. That's true.
Is that your story, Ian? Yeah.
It's going to be the commission. It's going to be decommissioned and demolished.
It's definitely going then.
Yeah.
That breaks my heart.
Are they building a new one?
Yeah. I don't know. Didn't say.
It doesn't say in the article. No, I had a quick scan through.
No, they didn't say they're going to build another one. It's just bits keep falling off it and they can't afford to mend it.
It is an iconic location. I mean, there's. I can't remember what Bond film was filmed there.
GoldenEye. It's Golden in there. I had to look for it myself.
Yeah.
It was Golden. I saw the image, I thought, oh, that was in a movie, wasn't it? Yeah, it was GoldenEye. When Pierce Brosnan running around chasing people and diving down the hole in the middle, wasn't it, and all that. It was also in Contact as well, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of sci-fi movies have been there.
I mean, it's an incredibly iconic image, isn't it? That dish. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and God, there's big bits
missing. It
hasn't
been in use since 2017. I mean, it's really not been used. I mean, it needs causing up to $14.3 million in repairs.
Good God, yeah, look at that.
At this point, they're not even sure they can repair it, and I think that's the big problem. Mm. Like, finding the money might have been possible, but they just don't know whether they can even do it.
That was a second cable failure. It wasn't clear the collection will be safe. Engineers don't know a time frame when the collapse might happen.
It's interesting.
So it's basically falling into the forest.
Well, it's interesting looking at the bowl that's underneath. I hadn't appreciated that the bowl was that close to the dish. So there's a good foundation there to build something new. But yeah, as you say, Patrice, it's not just the physical cost of repairing it. It's the logistics of repairing it as well as.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit sad. It's definitely one of the... It was very important at some point, and... It kind of still was. Like, the scientific community, from what I know, was kind of looking forward to having it back because there's still a lot of stuff that they wanted to do with it. But
yeah. Oh, my God. Look, there's a picture of the hole that's one of the cables snapped that was holding the main dish up, and it just hit the dish and scratched through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Such a shame.
I mean, particularly when they say towards the end of the article, I mean, it was supposed to be a beacon of opportunity for Puerto Rico. Mm. You know, all the money it would bring in of scientists and people coming to do work there. And
well, they have, though, haven't they? And SETI, I know SETI spends a lot of time in there as well. Search for extraterrestrial intelligence, yeah.
Well, that's what that's for, because it's sending radio signals, isn't it, out into the world blue yonder.
No, it's watching as well, though, isn't it?
Mostly it's watching.
Yeah.
Is it watching? I thought it was sending.
No, we don't send that much, I don't think, because of the fact of whatever you send is going to be at least 4 years to get to somewhere that we even roughly know now is probably not inhabited.
No, we're sending a lot. We're just not sending
we've been sending a lot for a really long time.
Yeah,
a very noisy little blue dot in the aren't we, in some ways, in terms of radio signals.
Yeah, but if you look at, like, I mean, if you go back to the thing about... the Hitler broadcast in Contact. Apparently, that's not really that viable, because we don't actually send out that much of a focus signal. It would get there, but they'd have to have incredibly sensitive detection, and there'd be virtually nothing of it left by the time it got there. So that you know, we took the Nuremberg rallies down, and we'd sent it back, or the Munich Olympics rather, and we sent it back to you. Is Berlin Olympics is actually a bit of a fallacy.
For sure.
But it made for a good story.
Yeah, it made a great story. Yeah.
Yeah.
The amount that we emit is too disparate. And in terms of the inverse square law of radiant energy, it means that by the time it got to, you know, 36 light years away, it's.
Yeah. Especially since the signals back then weren't very strong. Like, nowadays, it's a little bit different. But even then, like, we're sending out so much that it's just...
Yeah, but a lot of what we're getting out now is actually going up to satellites, and it's fairly focused as a beam and then coming back to Earth as a spread. It's not going out as a spread.
Yeah, to some extent, yeah.
Yeah, because it's coming back off satellites. So, you know, you want to send a very focused beam up to your satellite, and then you want the satellite to spread it coming down. We don't spread it going up anymore so much.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
Is that? Space is just so big that, like,
no, hands up, right?
It's not very helpful.
hands up, who wants another Arecibo?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep, completely.
Oh, Ali doesn't give a shit. He hasn't got the energy to raise his hand, or he doesn't care. You don't want another Arecibo?
Well, to be fair, Puerto Rico is part of the United States, not Canada, so why should he care?
Carried unanimously then. So you've got to spend the money now, Florida, because the University of Florida's got the contract to maintain it, hasn't it? So hopefully they'll get some more funds.
It would be great to see federal funding come in to make a new Arecibo, because mm-hmm. it's great for science, and it would also be great for Puerto Rico. Rico is such a cool place.
That's the thing, is I know Puerto Rico is U.S. soil, don't get me wrong, but is it enough of U.S. soil, if you like, to warrant offshore expenditure?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I'm not sort of sounding ignorant there. I know that.
Oh, I totally get it. Yeah. I get what you're saying. And
isn't there a push coming to make it a state anyway?
Puerto Rico is treated like some enemy country.
I'd say like the Bahamas.
In some respects. Yeah. But historically, Puerto Rico has been treated a lot better, and hopefully soon it will be treated better again.
Did it vote Democrat? Mm-hmm. By any chance? Probably.
Probably. Yeah. Well, it's hard to say because when you get into different ethnic groups that may have immigrated, say, from Cuba or from that general area down where Puerto Rico is, you get a lot of Republican voting people because of the historic support that they got from the Republican Party. So like long ago.
Right.
And it's a different thing now. And yet a lot of people still think of that party in the way it was for them a long time ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the other hand, scientific community doesn't care too much about like countries and so on.
Is Arecibo
other than China, I would say, NASA is like working with virtually anybody else in the world.
Would you have said that before the collapse, Arecibo was actually doing work that the global scientific community was interested in, or is it always in the last few years has it now become a bit more of a defunct site anyway? So what I'm saying is it worth replacing? Because we've got loads of other listening stations around the world. Is that one that we would miss if we didn't have it?
From what I've heard from other people, we would definitely miss it. Like a lot of podcasts have talked about it, and like it sounds like they would really miss it, or they are already missing it because it hasn't worked since 2017. Yeah, no. And we don't have enough. Like sometimes it's about the spread of installations. And sometimes it's also about the size. And this is, from what I know, one of the biggest ones still, and one of the most sensitive ones, or was at least.
And we don't have anything in orbit that can match what we were doing with Arecibo.
That's a problem. It would be great.
Hi.
You fall off.
No, Atlee's gone to his safe. He's going to get enough money for the next Arecibo.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. It's sad. Like, I'm pretty sure it will be replaced eventually. It's just a matter of where.
Yeah, no. You look at that picture of the bits fallen down, you kind of like, oh, that's quite, it's repairable. You're like, yeah, but each of those panels is the size of a house.
Yeah.
Steady on. Atlee, which story do you want, dude?
Second one.
Starlink.
Yep.
Dude, tell us about Starlink.
So Elon Musk wants to set up a huge low Earth orbit collection of satellites to allow for broadband communication.
42,000 of the buggers.
Yeah, all over the place. But there's a lot of concern that it's going to interfere with how other satellites are functioning, and also the fact that it's just going to it's just so many satellites to maintain and work. And a lot of people are seeing it as him using it as a test for how he would be able to handle communications if he were able to get us to Mars.
I love that the graphic for this article uses a Soyuz. Why a Soyuz?
You'll have to have seen it, that.
That's funny. But anyway, so he's basically, they've already been launching these satellites starting in May 2019 in batches of about 60.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be, so there's going to be 40,
hundreds of them up there. So
well, there's 42,000 in the end, isn't there? That's the thing.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And they're all, the key part of the fact is that they're in lower orbit than geostationary stuff at 20,000 miles, isn't it?
Much less latency, lower power needed to be able to run them. They offer a chance for better ranges of different frequencies because they're so low.
And already causing problems for astronomy and space research.
We've spoken on this podcast at length, haven't we, about the fact that they end up with trials across photography. But Elon was dismissive at the start, but he has rotated them so that they reflect less now. So
yeah,
he's done his bit. The key part is, like I say, they go up in batches of 60. They're all stacked, and then they just slowly flow out and spread out across the sky. And they're going to create a net, a physical net, aren't they, I guess, in the end, with that many?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering what that's going to mean in different coordinations for things like both launching things off the planet, returning to the planet, and then also once the net has become more realized, there's going to be a lot of other interferences. I'm just wondering...
There is an international register, isn't there, for space deployment? And the only people that aren't subscribed to it are China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone else has signed up for it. So your orbit and your locations have to be registered. So Elon's doing all of the launches into space at the moment, isn't he? So he should know where they are.
I was just saying, if he hits any of his own stuff, it's his own fault.
42,000 sounds a lot. I mean, it is in some respect, but it isn't in some other because Earth is pretty damn big.
Yeah, but it's the traceability and the speed that they're traveling at, isn't it? I mean, when you get into orbit, you've got to match your orbital speed. But if these things are running even fractionally at a different speed, then I remember seeing a film. We talked about it the other week, I think. I saw Scott Kelly, and he was doing a transmission to a school, and NASA broke in on a private channel. And they said, as soon as you break in on a private channel, you know it's super serious. And they've got like a rogue satellite that they can't stop. And how fast is it moving? 5 kilometers a second relative to you. Holy shit. So it's proper shit your pants time.
And I mean, if you look at these satellites being so closely nested together, I mean, 42,000 of them, yes, the Earth is large, but that's still putting them at a fairly close distance to each other. And you could end up with some horrible chain reactions if you end up with satellites
So I'll give a shout out here. One of the accounts that I follow on Twitter and really enjoy is Virtual Astro. And he does a thing. If you go to meteorwatch.org, he'll tell you when the meteor storms are coming. The Leonids one's just gone, hasn't it? And he will tell you the ISS passes. They're starting up again now. But he also then tweets out Starlink passes. And he fully admits that the Starlink passes that he pushes out are the latest information that he can get that says when they're coming over. And actually, half the time, they don't. I don't know if they don't or they do, but they're twisted so you don't get the reflection. But the data that he has access to does say Starlink incredibly bright, and then nothing happens quite regularly. So, and thanks to Virtual Astro for all he does, because I really love his channel. He does live talks as well. You should go and see one. I think there is a... I mean, it's great. I mean, there was a review this week, wasn't there, of the guy that unboxed his satellite dish and stuck it down in the garden and got his first taste of it. And he did. He was up on 100 megs a second. He got good speed out of it.
Mm-hmm. That is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I have.
It's an impressive way to get connectivity to a lot of wide varied areas, and I think that it will help a lot of different communities to be able to get access to things. But I mean, when you look at most of the stuff that's on the internet right now, don't we really want to keep some people off of it so they can actually still think and concentrate? And
I have a couple of friends who are actually waiting for this, and I mean, you would think like in Austria nobody would need it, but the reality is like in the really rural areas here, like in the mountains and so on, or even like, I mean, not even proper mountains, but like just coming out in the woods. Like he works from home like some of the time, like we all do, and he has a hard, I mean, he can connect and Zoom works and so on, but it is like it's teetering on like not being, like not working.
Oh, even in my area, there's people, I guarantee you, that could use this because the internet in my area, in some places, is incredibly spotty, and when you can get it, it's really not that fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, even the UK, we've had a few years of black spots of no DSL connections where people have dug up, farmers have dug up fields and laid cables to the nearest sort of points to get their own connections in. Mm. And there was certainly satellite for a while. In terms of connectivity, I think we did some. I remember one. We connected two buildings with satellite at one point because it made the most sense. One place I was working, so we are still using sort of here in just a more simplest sort of terms. But I think there's definitely a place for it, just as long as it doesn't end up being. We simply have metal rain falling out of the sky because these things go wrong.
Yeah.
What goes up's got to come down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's the worry too, is because since they're in a low Earth orbit, they wouldn't burn up as much. More of them would make it to the ground.
Because they haven't got long enough to come down, have they? I mean, if they're smaller, though, you'd hope they would just sort of evaporate before they got to the Earth.
They're obviously very tiny. They
would melt and disintegrate and turn into...
That's one of the requirements for anything nowadays that's sent up. You have to have a plan how it will come down.
Fair enough.
Even if it's some poor farmer's house in Russia.
Hopefully.
Well, usually it is,
I was just going to say, how many stories do we hear about satellites destroying things? Not as many as
not that
think,
many, no.
The number of that are out there. But
yeah. No, I mean, the only one was the other week, a few years ago, where China were going to disintegrate a satellite, weren't they? Were going to blow it up. How many tiny bits of space debris that was going to make.
It was broken and they couldn't control it anymore. Yeah.
But blowing it up wasn't the answer. I can't show your story, Patrice, because it's wired and they keep going, no, you've got to sign up for an account before you can watch any more. Bastards.
I have exactly the same problem now. I'm trying to have a read of that myself.
So they can go shove that.
Sorry. Then let me... No,
talk us through the story, mate. Go on. We just won't have a picture, that's all.
So there was a research, I mean, there have been a couple of papers over the years. This has been more and more of a story. But there's just a research paper that was released like a couple of days ago where like a research group from the US and Europe, they fed pictures of Congress members into Google Cloud's image recognition service and looked at what type of phrases were like service was attaching to them. And what they found is that there is still, after like a couple of years now, still a massive bias, gender bias in those like search terms. So what they found is like that a lot of like the male Congress members got like words like official, business person, spokesperson, public speaking, like those types of terms.
Yeah.
Whereas women got a lot of times like more like objective, or like not objective, like more personal things like smile, like black hair, like chin, hairstyle, person, like this type of like more outward facing things. As I said, all of them were congressmen or women, so all of them could have been like in an official position of some sort. Like usually they have like flags in the background or whatever. So what it shows, and what we've seen in also like other algorithms like that, and machines like that from Amazon, from Microsoft, and so on, is that there's like, you would think that like AI and algorithms and so on, they're like completely neutral, but reality is that there is a lot of bias in them.
Well, I mean, I'm just going back to
the data
you're saying about
it's because how they've been programmed.
Yeah, but I'm just also thinking that if you're talking about women congresswomen
mm-hmm.
Opposed mm-hmm. to men, I think if you look at the data that you would grab from the to give you the database to create the opinion from the AI, then you would probably find that a lot of those congresswomen use a smile as a disarming technique because they're in a situation where they have to deal with an awful lot of blokes.
You would think so.
So, but that's why I'm saying there might be a bias towards the more emotional and effeminate responses of smile, flirt, you know, those kind of things that women shouldn't have to do it. I'm not suggesting that they should, but what I'm saying is by tendency, there will be a softer side to women than there will be to men, even if they're congressmen and women.
You would think so. But the interesting thing is, like, out of the people that smiled in the pictures, on the male side, there was one where it showed up, like where one of the phrases that showed up was smile, and on the women's side it was 8.
Yeah, but I mean, so I'm a photographer, mate, and I can guarantee you
there is a massive difference.
People don't smile with their mouth. No, I'm telling you, I am absolutely telling you, people do not smile with their mouth. Genuine smiles are in the eyes. They're nothing to do with the mouth. So when you see a genuine smile from someone, and I guarantee you that most of those blokes would not be smiling for a formal portrait in exactly in a natural way, almost certainly.
That is true. But as I said, it's a general thing. Like, it's not just about smiles. Like as I said, the terms with the biggest percentages were all descriptive of, like, as I said, clothing and so on. On the female side, and as I said, it is a problem in the data that those algorithms were fed.
Because the only thing that was different between the men was the color of the tie, because they were all in gray suits otherwise.
probably that too, but like, you see other issues. Like, there was a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, there was one where they tested, I think, Microsoft's algorithm that had a massive racial bias. It would detect, like, they try to detect the gender based on the photo, and white men were easier to detect, or like white men and white women in general were more accurately detected than like people of color. And that is a bias in the algorithm.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you again as a photographer that if I shoot a black person, I'll probably add more light than a white person, because it's more difficult to pick out features as a photographer.
But if that's the thing, if the algorithm was completely unbiased, that should not matter.
But the algorithm's looking at a visual image, is it not?
You and me, we can do it. We can look at a person, we can look at a photo, and we can detect it.
No,
so the algorithm.
Yeah, but you're talking about for a computer. A computer is looking for certain shadows, certain lines, certain angles, and things like that. Depending on the lighting of the photo, will be harder to discern the race of that person.
The photo, if the photo is absolutely good for equal, then I would suggest that yes, the AI should be able to detect better. But the subjective element of that is the quality of the photo, definitely.
Yes.
And what data do they use in order to identify who is who when they're scanning these pictures? Have they been given a set of stock images that represent this woman, this smile, this, that, to load into the AI database for it to then be able to go, yeah, that's look at that mouth, there's a millimeter here, millimeter there, that represents someone smiling.
Yeah, but
is that how it works? I mean, I have no idea, I'll be honest. But that never stopped me asking the questions before. Have we fed it with rubbish, basically?
Yeah, also for the gender thing, like you take a hopefully sufficiently large data set, and you separate it out, like usually it's like 70-30 or something, and 30% you manually like categorize. You say, okay, this is a man, this is a woman, this is, like, I don't know, these are the attributes that are assigned to this, these are the attributes assigned to that.
But I don't understand. What are we trying to establish here? Because I don't understand that if an AI has been programmed by people, and I'm presuming that it's a multicultural and multisexual group of people who've programmed it. If it doesn't get it right, it's just because it's a shit algorithm.
You know, the problem here is that the bias is already there when it's programmed.
By the people who are programming it.
You would think it is multicultural, but the reality is, and I can tell you that very clearly because I work in that industry, it is not. Like, it's very, I mean, women are very rare, women of
color.
But
it's still just a shit algorithm.
Yeah, it is, but that's the point. But we see, like, when people talk about algorithms, and, like, I mean, listen to Mark Zuckerberg and listen to, like, I mean, yeah, he's a twat anyway, but listen to all those people and listen to, like, politicians and, like, anybody in the tech industry. They all think algorithms are unbiased, and they're not. And this is showing it. But that's the problem. I mean, that is something, I mean, I think it's good that we're seeing this, because then if you see it and if you can test it, then you can fix it.
So currently, as humans, we do not have the capacity to create an unbiased algorithm for AI. We can probably learn how to do that.
I mean, I just got to come back to my own thought process here, Jeff, about, you know, if I look at someone and I'm trying to decide if they're a man or a woman, I would say that, generally speaking, it comes across as quite obvious for about 90% of the population. But there are plenty of times I've had to look and still not been entirely sure about male and female. And certainly with a much more openness of gender fluidity with people and the transgender issue, there are an awful lot of boys who are now women who are extremely effeminate and are extremely effective looking women, and then there are others that aren't. Trying to expect an algorithm to pick out gender fluidity is almost impossible, as well as on top of that. I think the thing is that
would be usually should be evenly distributed. Like those outliers would probably be evenly distributed.
Like, I think what he's saying is that when you look at the results from the algorithms, given the what you would assume would be the level of outliers is vastly outnumbered in what the what the actual algorithms are producing. And a lot of times I find that even experience with people that have done some of this programming, they'll use pictures of themselves or friends because they don't want to deal with copyright issues or whatever else. And they'll have two or three or four people that they'll use until they get the algorithm to recognize that's a person, that's a male, that's a female. And quite often those people look like them. And with the majority of the programmers being white males doing this, it reflects that. And so the initial part, it's almost like when you're teaching a child, the initial lessons in machine learning tend to have a lot more weight on them than the subsequent after lessons of machine learning. And so you'll probably see that bias can carry through. And you're right, though. The algorithms are shit. They need to be reworked. We need to come up with a way to allow these algorithms to be improved in a more adaptive way. And right now, we don't have that. And I think someone else said that, you know, people aren't capable of doing it. And it's quite possible that we're not capable of fully dropping our own biases, however small or in the background they are. In order to not project them forward in the science of this.
I think it's hard. I mean, if you look at it as a human being and go back to, you know, the kind of ideals of chimps and things like that, there are lots of body language things that take place to understand more information about the person opposite you. So you're saying as a human, you would do that, but you wouldn't do that. I wouldn't look across a room and try and work out if someone was male or female if it wasn't obvious to me without perhaps then looking at them. And if they looked at me, I'd smile and they'd smile back and that would give me a clue. Or I'd look at the way that they were standing, or I would look at who they were talking to in the room rather than just them as an isolation thing. You know, that's what I'm saying. You pick up so many clues as to what people do to guess things like their nature, their ethos, their philosophies, their morality, you know, that kind of stuff. You spend an awful lot of time doing that from a distance and judge people wrongly all the time. I've got of people that I've met at networkings and things like that. Yeah. And I've thought, God, you're an absolute tosspot. And then like 2 weeks later, after I've spoken to them and had a chat with them, it's like, oh, actually, you're all right. I got you wrong. You know,
I think that we're seeing the same problem that we have with text messaging, right? Is that if you look at the problem of context and emotion and being able to discern the real meanings behind the words, they say a picture is 1,000 words, but a picture doesn't really necessarily carry much more context than straight text does. So it'd be almost as hard to detect what was the person feeling when they wrote this text, and try and have an AI do that, as it is to have some of these pictures be discerned by an AI without the context that the human was speaking of. You know, the movements, the interactions, the other things, the body language.
Add to the fact that most of the people that did the programming are probably riddled with dyslexia and Asperger's as well.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. That's all. Yeah. No, I mean, and nobody is expecting everything to be perfect. Like, I mean, it doesn't have to be 100%, but it should reflect at least close to what we would expect from it.
I think that's incredibly hard. I think that's an incredibly high expectation.
Sure.
Give them whatever.
Well, I mean, but it also shows us that
if you can get it, right,
how much is necessary and how far we are back in machine learning. We keep thinking that our machine learning is so advanced and so capable. We need to look at things like this and use that as some of the things that force us to create barriers to what can be done with these machine learning algorithms and how much they can be trusted to do the right things and to do the things that need to be done.
Muller's put a blank Google link in the chat room. Don't click it. where did Muller put something further up? No, okay. I can't find it now, but he put a comment earlier on, but he spelt it wrong.
Yeah, he did. Went a little way up.
Yeah, no, it's no point. It's out of context now. It doesn't mean a thing. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by TSO Host. They've been a long-term now supporter of the network, and we really love their support. You too should love their support because, A, they offer great services. They've got quite competitive rates on certain things. They do web hosting, VPS, VPN. They do domains and all that kind of stuff. And you get 20% off if you use the offer code BTN20 from your hosting services. So they're well worth checking out anyway. But all they need from you is brand recognition on social media. Please. Not many people have done it this week. We've had a few weeks where the people have been great, but please get yourself out on the socials and say thanks at TSO Host for supporting at British Tech. That is all they want. So please get out there and do that. Otherwise, we fold as a podcast because the servers that they give us and the bandwidth that we get is something that we wouldn't be able to afford to buy. So please support them because they're brill. And also support IMN Max. If you've got anything with an Apple logo on it, these guys can fix it for you. They are not bound by the 5-year legacy issue that you get with Apple dealers. So these guys can fix absolutely anything of any age as long as it's got an Apple logo on it. And we're still waiting till lockdown's over and my PowerBooks are going to go over for a little bit of video and laughing to get them to fix the hinge on it and stuff like that. Anything with an Apple logo is repairable. If you've got old Apple tech sticking around that you don't want anymore, then tell them what you've got. They'll make you an offer on it provisionally, send you a UPS label. Then when they get it in, they'll do a formal appraisal. And if they say yes, the money will be in your bank account within a couple of hours. Ask Ian Lewis, it's what happened to him. And also then they will do data recovery as well. They have recovered data from one of our international listeners out in Hawaii. He got the phone over to them because luckily he worked for an airline, so it was dirt cheap. But for about 20 quid, he got the phone over to them. They managed to strip it back and get all the data saved, and then they sent it electronically over to him over the internet. So absolutely bloody brilliant firm. I can't back these guys enough. Mo, the guy that I know, did a thing this morning at a networking group that I'm at, and his presentation was excellent. Component-level repairs on all Apple devices ever. So check them out. And again, get on the socials. Say thanks to at IMN Max for supporting at British Tech. Time for the cool thing. Starts off, Mr. Grant.
Oh, hang on. Oh, what was I going to do?
Oh, shit. I got no cool thing.
A memory.
I have a cool thing. I do.
Honest.
Which will go, I've found billing. We'll go with this, which is an app called One Calendar.
Okay.
Cross platform. Well, it's basically a way of pulling calendar from my Apple one, but for home, my Gmail calendar and my Exchange calendar, all in one place. So I can keep everything up to date, and it all syncs with everything else. And it works on Windows. It works on Mac. It works on my iPad. It works on my phone.
All right, that's pretty
brilliant.
Cool.
Brilliant little sort of. It's just one of these things. It's a bit of glue to connect things together, essentially. And I mean, the UI isn't the prettiest in the world. It's a bit clunky, but it gives me exactly what I need, which is a calendar with all of my different things on in one big, in one nice little window that I can look at and go, yeah, okay, I'm busy that night, or I'm doing the big show on Thursday. And so that's really great. So I really like it. It as a dead simple little app. OneCal.nl. Did I chuck the link in the chat room? Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you did. I'm showing it.
Lovely. Superb little bit of software.
Cost?
Nothing.
Newt. Very good. Like that. Well done.
Might be a couple of bob on the Windows one, but it's not anything horrendous. It's not pounds. It's maybe a couple of quid on the Windows Store, I think, but it's not certainly not much anywhere else. It's free, the Mac App Store.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much, Jeffrey.
My pick is Bartender 4 for the Mac. And for those of you that aren't familiar with Bartender, holy crap, you are welcome that I'm introducing you to the world of Bartender. So I have a ton of menu bar items on my Mac, and managing them and organizing them without Bartender, you wouldn't be able to do it. It would be a disaster. And so now Bartender 4, it's out as a public beta, and it's free during the public beta phase. It adds Big Sur compatibility, but it also changes the way Bartender actually displays menu bar items. So the way it works is you have menu bar items that you see all the time, and the menu bar items that Bartender shows you when you need to see them. So you can have the set you see all the time, and then the other set that pops up. And so the way it worked before was you would click the menu, the Bartender button in your menu bar, and then it would pop out all these menu bar items that you could use, click it again, and then they disappear. And now all you have to do is roll over the empty space in your menu bar, and everything appears. And so you can click on what you want. When you roll off the menu bar, everything disappears again. And you have better controls for managing your menu bar items. And it's just, to me, it's an indispensable tool. And it's $15, but it's free during the public beta phase, so you don't have to pay $15 right now. If you already owned Bartender, it's $7.50 to upgrade to version 4. Also, it's a setup app.
Hey, love setup.
Yep.
We got some stuff coming up with MacPaw, hopefully in the next few weeks, about clean my Mac as well, so keep listening. Good pick, Patrice.
So my pick is a book. Or it's an audiobook. It's from a lady that I've been listening to a podcast called How to Be a Girl. It's like the podcast is about a little girl. Like the podcast started like years ago when she was like 3. Now she's 13, so 10 years ago. Very infrequent podcast, but a very interesting story. And about like her, well, then boy, announcing that she's a girl and then transitioning and all of that. And she's written a memoir about all of that, like about all her struggles with like school and like everything that goes with it. I'm picking it because one, it's a really good book, and two, I really like supporting her. They've really been through a lot. And like, if you can, like go out there. As far as I know, it's only available in Audible. So at least I haven't seen it anywhere else. Maybe it's coming. I don't know. It was just released. So, but if you're on Audible, worldwide, doesn't matter where you are, cool. Go get it. It's How to Be a Girl.
Excellent. It says it's free. Yeah. Included with free trial. No, so you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
It's part of your collection. Oh, buy $24.95. Yeah. $24.95 if you want to buy it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Spot on. Atlee, what have you got for us?
So I ended up agreeing to do some video work, just some light video work for a local museum in town for Christmas. And in order to do it, I picked up this DJI gimbal. And it's actually really, really nice. I really, really enjoyed using it. This is what it looks like. Your phone basically attaches on here, and once you turn it on, it becomes fully active, and you can control it quite easily. It gives you great stabilization, and it's super easy to use.
Yeah, do you not have to sit that on the table to start off with to get it to get level?
There's a few of them I've seen. Actually.
Yeah, certainly the early ones, you had to sit them on a table to get the calibration, and then you could pick them up every time you switched them on.
No, this one was basically just did this with it. It also comes with a tripod base for the, and it has the standard screw in on the bottom, so you can attach it to any other camera equipment that you need to, as far as bases or tripods or clamp arms or whatever you want to use.
Excellent.
And it's great. It gives you full ability to turn it and rotate it and to zoom in, zoom out, angle it. So I mean, it's really, really rather robust. And it was $179 Canadian. Okay. And yeah, really reasonable.
$149 American plus.
Yeah.
Shipping fees.
Yeah, but you can pick it up in pretty much any electronics shop, any shop that sells electronics, like Best Buy or what's the big one? Fry's. Any of those places will have it.
Fry's Electrical, bloody hell.
Mm. Yeah.
God. I'm trying to find it, and I can't see it in the UK store.
In the UK, I couldn't find it. That's the only reason why I didn't have the link, as I was trying to locate it.
No, I think
in
the UK. We still only get the three at the moment on Amazon. So.
But yeah, it's a great little tool. It's nice and stable. It's really nice.
Just as an alternative to that, if people do want it, I've got the Osmo Pocket 4K camera, and I've got two little brackets that allow it to link to GoPro fittings, and I've stuck it on a 3-meter long audio boom. And because it weighs next to nothing, you get rising boom shots with it dead easily, and then you can pan with it, and you can actually run a wire and get the remote control to operate on it as well.
That's amazing. That's the one with the camera built right in, right?
Yeah, it's the whole handheld thing. It gets the same shots as the Osmo, but it's got the camera built into it. It's a little more expensive, 250 quid, as opposed to 109 for the Osmo 3. But no, it's excellent. If you want to film with your phone, though, the Osmo, I've seen a couple of people use them. And an estate agent I know does house tours with his, and it's beautiful. It works brilliantly.
Super smooth, super nice.
Yeah.
And just ridiculously easy to use. It takes zero. It does half the thinking for you. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, they're excellent. That screw-in thread as well, you should be able to put a pole into that.
It's a standard threading,
an extended boom as well. So
standard threading for that stuff. Yeah,
I'll do my cool thing as the DJ Osmo Pocket then, because I haven't got anything else. I have bought absolutely bugger all this week. It's not a normal week for me at all. I've been buying junction boxes and things. So
I had that a little while ago.
Yeah, where can you get a hold of you, Mr. Grant?
Mr. Grant, I will find me at TIOABOA, turn it off and back on again, in the chat room, on LinkedIn, usual places. I will be somewhere teaching Convault probably next week. Well, somewhere here teaching Convault next week, the usual.
Cool, mate. Thank you very much. Jeff, where will you be?
Twitter and Instagram. I am JGam at both places. What is today? Okay, I think this morning, the latest episode of Apple Context Machine came out, and I was on that talking about HomePod Mini. There's an episode of Mac Voices that's coming out in the next couple days, I think, with some holiday gift guide picks. And here on the Big Show, tomorrow on the Mac Show, I get around.
Excellent. Patrice, where would you be?
Every week here on the Big Show and on the Mac Show, all the social media links and everything I do on thepatrice.com, and my podcast is The Foodie Flashback.
Excellent, mate. Anyone coming up, or?
I still haven't posted apps, and I still have to reach out to people. It's just been so busy. that I'm like, if anybody wants to be on Footy Flashback, just reach out to me and we'll set something up.
Okay. And last but my name is Leeds. Atlee, where would you be, buddy?
You can reach me on the socials at Atlee Hunter, and you can reach me on my blog at atleehunter.com.
Excellent.
And here.
My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and you can follow the network at British Tech. We'll be back again next week as normal for the big show on a Thursday night at 7 p.m. and we'll be doing the match show tomorrow at 4 p.m. and the same again the following week. I will be sitting here now until whatever hour it is that I manage to work out how to get the camera working on this, because I ain't doing this again tomorrow. Because Muller's been talking about me having the full blue rinse and the full Enos Sharples or something like that. It's Molly sucked and there we go. Because of me blue rinse, bastard.
Yeah, you look a little bit like you're drunk right now, like a little bit reddish.
No, no. The it's interesting because when I, like, see there, look, it gets rid of it, and then when I take it down, mm-hmm. it comes back. So it's auto correcting it's auto correcting the color. So just.
I thought you were auto-correcting your stage makeup. Andy Cap filter.
Yeah, no, I actually do look naturally like I'm slightly jaundiced from all the alcohol I've drunk during lockdown. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.